Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And welcome back to the South End Zone, brought to you by Belly Up Sports. I'm your host, Jason Bailey. I'm with Eric Mulhare. Eric, we're back after a couple of weeks off, man. How you been?
Been good. Keeping busy.
Yeah, a lot of old man stuff going on for you. Did you break out the white New Balances yet? Get them all greened up for the summer?
No, I'm a flip-flops guy for yard work.
Well, that's true. You live where it's 100 degrees all the time. Yeah. So we're good. All right. Well, Eric, we finally get to talk about a team that we've been trying to get somebody on here for like 2.5 years about. Yeah. So finally, we have reached a point where we can do that. But it's kind of funny because it's the same guy we talked to last year.
About a different team. Yeah.
On a different team.
But return guest, different topic.
Yes, different team, different topic, new job for our guy, but we're going to bring him in now. Today, we're going to talk about Texas Longhorns, and we're going to bring back Josh Newman from Lone Star. What is it? LoneStarLive.com?
LoneStarLive.com. Yep. New gig, new beat, new state.
And yeah, it's, man.
Much hotter in Texas than it is in Utah. I can say that.
Indeed. Well, Josh, how you been, man? I know lots got to be changed from living in Utah to living in Austin, Texas. A little different there.
Yeah, no, it's been a crazy 10 months professionally, personally. But, you know, we came out on the other side better for the things we've been through. And, you know, as you guys alluded to, covering Texas, covering it for LoneStarLive.com. And we're pretty far from a season, but I'm very excited to actually cover a Texas football season.
Indeed, and we are very excited about Texas this year. First year in the SEC, a lot of, you know, I don't want to say roster questions. There's a few that we'll get to, but for the most part, I mean, the core of their team seems to be returning. You know, Quinn Ewers, Sarkisian, a lot of the staff continuity, things of that nature. So things are looking up, but we'll see. So I'm going to let Eric hit you first, and he's going to talk to you a little bit about the defense, because I think that's where the majority of the questions and the conversation is going to take place. So I'm going to let Eric talk to you on that, and then on the back end, I'll hit you with a few offensive questions, and then we'll run through the schedule real quick, and we'll let you get gone, man. So
Eric,
take it away.
All right. So I guess I'm going first because I'm a fellow Buc-ee's aficionado. I saw on Twitter you're a recent convert.
Oh yes, it was quite the experience. That was that was an amusement park type experience, walking in the Buc-ee's for the first time. It was wild.
Yeah, you can spend a lot of time in there without seeing the same thing twice for a quote unquote gas station. Anyways, back to football. So normally when we do these, Josh, we will start off with the defense and just talk about like position group, maybe that would be concerning or the biggest holes to fill. In this case for Texas, I think it's outside looking in, it feels fairly obvious that the defensive front with Murphy and Sweat leaving, you know, I know Jalen Ford, I thought was a really good player for them at linebacker. Ryan Watts, I believe, was a multi-year starter at safety. Those guys are both gone as well. But those two guys on the defensive interior replacing them seems like Texas's biggest chore. Is that an area that Longhorn fans should be worried about?
Yeah, I mean, that's been the number one topic of conversation, you know, throughout spring practice. Tomorrow is Thursday. That'll be spring practice number 14. The spring game number 15 is Saturday. And yeah, just all the way through, you look at the defensive front, specifically the interior. Look, you're not going to replace DeMondre Sweat, Byron Murphy, either individually or collectively. They were monsters. You know, they were giving up like 83 rushing yards per game. You know, an elite yeah. run-stopping type of duo.
Third
in the country. So what are you supposed to do? You know, they've got I go back and forth. I don't know that the defensive front is like a grave concern, because you look at it, Vernon Broughton has played in a ton of games. Alfred Collins has played in a ton of games, right? These are 40, 45 game veterans. They just haven't had the opportunity to start because they've been playing behind a guy like Sweat and a guy like Murphy. But, you know, you look at it, you know, Texas likes to use a lot of defensive tackles, a lot of guys along the front and in an effort to keep guys fresh. Once you get beyond Vernon Broughton and Alfred Collins, the room starts to look a little light. Sadir Mitchell is a young guy, okay, a redshirt freshman, didn't play a ton last year. Aaron Bryant, young guy, redshirt sophomore, hasn't played a ton. Who else? Tia Sevilla has a lot of game experience, but he's a transfer from Arizona. There's an acclimation process, of course, when you're coming from a different program, Arizona to Texas. So, you know, Steve Sarkisian has made pretty clear here that they are not just going to automatically jump into the transfer portal just to get a guy, just to get a defensive tackle. I think they like where they are on paper, you know, 2, 3, 4, right? Broughton and Collins and Sadir Mitchell and Aaron Bryant. Like, I think they're pretty comfortable up to 4. But once you get past Broughton and Alfred Collins, you just don't know what you have, because these guys have just not played a ton of football. So, you know, I don't think we're going to figure these things out on Saturday. I mean, as we all know, a spring game is a bit of a dog and pony show. You know, they're not opening up a playbook. You're not going to see everything. So as spring practice ends, the portal window is open until April 30th. That is a major, major, like, bullet point topic of conversation. What does Sark do at defensive tackle? Does he think he has enough, or does he think he has to go to the portal to find at least one more guy?
Mm. Well, and then there's also, like, the aspect of those guys you mentioned, you know, will they all be there, right? Because the portal, unfortunately, for some schools, Texas doesn't feel it as much as a place like Stanford or Northwestern, but the portal does work both ways. So that, I'm sure that's part of it as well. So
yeah, they had secondary. They had a couple of edge rushers transfer like today.
Yeah.
So it's
oh, I hadn't
but
seen
in
that.
Fairness, I mean, but in fairness, I mean, they've had, I don't have the number right in front of me. They've had 4 guys say they were transferring in the last 6 days. Mm-hmm. Of the 4, the 4 guys combined have like 9 total starts. So it's not like you're losing yeah. like primary players. But to your point, I mean, you are losing depth, but, you know, they haven't lost anybody who was like, oh my God, like, we have to replace this guy. You know, that just hasn't happened, at least yeah. not yet.
Mm. So playing in the Big 12, the secondary the last couple of years has been a concern for Texas, right? With that style of football they play in that league. And, you know, Texas's improvement defensively is probably the biggest reason they went from 5 wins to 8 wins to 11 over the last couple of years. You know, 15th in the country in scoring defense, 3rd in rushing defense, like we talked about, 2nd a smidge behind Georgia for 3rd down conversion rate defensively. Very, very good defense. But in the SEC, there's maybe a little more emphasis up front defensively than in the Big 12, but you still have to have a secondary that can play, because there are still teams like Missouri or a Georgia or an Alabama that can torch you if you're not good on the back end. So how are they looking there?
Look, they certainly lost a lot, but, you know, Texas is a place where, and look, I've been in Austin for all of 10 weeks. Okay. I'm brand new, but it became very apparent very immediately that Texas is a place where guys leave for the NFL or guys leave for the portal. And Texas is a place, right, with the NIL machine, you know, churning. They can go to the portal and get almost whatever they want. And I'm sure we'll get into the wide receiver situation. That's like an NIL machine over there. But Andrew Mukuba, right, who's like a 32, 34 game player for Clemson, you know, was the number one rated safety in the country out of the portal. He's coming to Texas. He can fortify the back end as a guy who has played not only a lot of Power 5 football, but a lot of Power 5 football at a high level. So, you know, you take Makuba and Manny Muhammad, right, a sophomore cornerback. That's a guy who's played really well early in his career. Jahdae Barron, you know, you stick Jahdae Barron kind of as that third defensive back when you're in the nickel. He's had like a lot of like nagging things over the course of his career. And, you know, Sark has made a real concerted effort to not run Jahdae Barron into the ground during spring. They're picking and choosing where, you know, they put him in. When they go live, he's not like tackling to the ground. They're really trying to keep him fresh because he's an older guy. And when he's healthy, he's very, very good. So like, as we're talking, I'm sort of like looking at the depth chart. It's like, yeah, like I can talk myself into their back end. Like I don't love it. I don't think it's as good as last year. I think Makuba specifically at free safety brings a different element in terms of physicality on the backside that maybe they didn't have last year. So, you know, Makuba, Derek Williams at the other safety, Barron, if he's healthy, you know, I can talk myself into it, but like, as we're sitting here on April 17th, like it's not a question mark, but I'd like to see a game. I'd like to see a game with this back end. Cause I'm just not super sold.
Mm. So you mentioned the physicality piece, and that was kind of our biggest concern a couple of years ago when Texas and Oklahoma announced they were leaving to the SEC is, you know, they have some work to do. Both of those programs, we thought, had some work to do to kind of up the physicality level to go play in that conference. Texas, it seems, particularly this last year up front, has done that. Can they maintain that, I guess, would be, you know, losing the guys up front that we talked about obviously goes a long ways, or that's a hurdle they got to clear. And it sounds like they're still working towards it, but at the end of the day, they're going from a Big 12 schedule to an SEC schedule, and there's still probably room to improve in that regard. And do you think they've done that?
I think that they did a good job even before the SEC stuff rolled around. Like, this is year four under Steve Sarkisian. Like, and if you start looking at the rosters of the previous 3 years and what, you know, some of the raw numbers, I think they've done a good job of building the defense building the defense in like Steve Sarkisian's mold, like what he wants it to be. And this whole time he's wanted it to be this like intimidating physical type of force. And, you know, you look up front and really you look at the second level at linebacker. I mean, I really think that they've done a nice job of bringing in and nurturing the guys that they want. I mean, you look at linebacker, Anthony Hill was a freshman All-American last year. And that, you know, eye test, I don't know if you guys are eye test guys. I'm an eye test guy. Like, I watch Anthony Hill and like, that's a 3-year kid. He's going to the NFL draft after 3 years. Like, that's the type of like body he has and the way he moves and just the physical nature that, you know, that he plays football with. And look, this is a team that really tries to employ, you know, a number of edge rushers, right? Trey Moore had 14 and a half sacks last year for UTSA. Barron Sorrell, older guy. Ethan Burke, older guy. So, you know, the defensive front, sure, there's questions. I don't think there's really any questions at linebacker. And then, you know, the back end, again, maybe some questions. I like Makuba. They've got some veteran guys. Again, if Jahdae Barron can stay healthy. But I do think that they have employed here enough physicality where I don't think they're going to be intimidated by, like, an SEC schedule. I think the schedule, and, you know, we'll get into it, you know, later a bit. Like, if you look at Texas' schedule, I think it lays out well in favor of Texas, right? Like, you miss Alabama. Georgia comes to Austin. You know, there's not a reason defensively why they can't be very good. I don't know that they're going to be one of like the elite defensive outfits nationally, but certainly in the top half or the top third of the SEC. And if you're that good defensively, you can win a hell of a lot of games. Yeah. So you're going to win a lot of games if the defense, as presently constructed, plays up to what we think they're capable of.
Mm. All right, so last question before I kick it over to Jason for the offense, and this is more of a nostalgia question. You probably don't get it as often as you used to, and it's maybe been a bit, but is Cam Rising going to start the opener?
That's terrific. No, my look, I left plenty of friends in Salt Lake City. I'm, I, you know, the the beat writers were very, you know, we're very tight. I've stayed in touch. I'm, God willing. I mean, he played spring practice with a long sleeve on his knee, but I am told that he will start the opener in year seven. Year seven for Cam Rising, who started his career at Texas.
Wow. Hold
was it Texas or Texas Tech?
Texas in 2018.
Oh, I thought I...
2018. Okay.
2018.
Tom Herman days. Oh, my goodness.
My Lord.
Oh, geez. Well, so, Josh, this is going to be a little bit quicker on the offensive side because they have far more questions. But the position that we always like to start with is offensive line. And for the – yeah, this is probably the, what, second out of the last four or five of these that we've done, Eric, where offensive line is really not a big, huge concern.
Yeah, I think Florida State and now Texas are really the only non-huge question marks.
Yeah, so Josh,
we've covered.
As far as the offensive line goes, I mean, Texas has a lot of dudes back. They've got a lot of veteran depth. I mean, are there any concerns? Are they looking to add portal depth there? Anything like that?
I don't think so. I mean, you look at the offensive line, you know, four stars return, right? Kelvin Banks is like an All-American-ish type of guy at left tackle. Jake Majors has started a million games at center. Cameron Williams on the outside. So if you want to start like breaking down like position by position, whether it's offense or defense, the offensive line is like one of the places where just nobody's even talking about it because nobody's concerned. And you have so many games on your belt across those five guys and just so many games started, played in a Big 12 championship game, played in the college football playoff semifinal. These guys are older. They've seen it. This is year four for a lot of them under Steve Sarkisian. So we're just not talking about the offensive line hardly at all because they're just not that there's nothing to talk about, but it's like there's no reason to be concerned. Like we know on August 30th, when they open against Colorado State, we know what the offensive line is going to look like. And that's just what it is. And, you know, Quinn Ewers is better off, of course, for having that level of veteran leadership in front of him.
Yeah, that's like the unicorn of college football rosters right now. There's almost no team in America who just at this point in 2024 knows what their offensive line is going to look like in week one. That's a huge advantage for Texas, I think. But let's talk about the wide receiver position a little bit because you mentioned all of the NIL, you know, the flood of Texas, you know, that oil money and all that. So with a guy like Baxter and Blue behind him, I don't know if I'm Steve Sarkisian, if I just try to lean on the run a little bit heavy, or do you think all of these guys that are coming in from Isaiah Bond and Amari Nyblack and all those dudes, I mean, have you seen anything in the spring or have you heard anything in the locker room that they're going to come out just slinging it with all the chemistry you would think they would, you know, need to have a successful offense in the SEC?
Yeah, it's a fair question. You know, we've seen like limited parts of practice. We've probably seen like a grand total of like 30 minutes of practice. And of course, we're not seeing any live hitting or anything, but like Isaiah Bond, you know, the Alabama transfer, like looks like a dude. He just looks like a guy. Matthew Golden had two very good years at Houston. Silas Bolden, right, the, you know, explosive slot receiver from Oregon State. He's not in Austin yet. He's finishing coursework at Oregon State, but as someone who covered the Pac-12, you know, very closely, I watch a lot of Oregon State, a lot of Silas Bolden. That kid can really play. Now, all of this is to say that, you know, listening to Steve Sarkisian and, like, you know, trying to analyze what he's saying, it doesn't sound like he wants to have Quinn Ewers slinging it all over the place 40, 43 times a game. He can do it. He's shown that he can do it, but, you know, Sark really wants to lean on the run, right? Give it to C.J. Baxter. Give it to Jaden Blue. C.J. Baxter is excellent, you know, coming out of the backfield on a swing or, you know, or something of that nature. So, you know, under Steve Sarkisian, they've run the ball very effectively, okay? Bijan Robinson for two seasons. Jonathan Brooks last season. C.J. Baxter actually beat Jonathan Brooks out for the job last year, but he struggled early, and then Jonathan Brooks comes in and, you know, he goes nuts, you know, 1,100 yards until he blew out his knee. So, they're capable and they've got the personnel to throw it as much as they want. I just don't think that Steve Sarkisian believes that is the recipe for success. And when you've got essentially you've got two number one running backs, essentially, in Baxter and Blue, and you've probably got another one or two guys who you think you can lean on for some purpose if you have to, I think you're going to see majority run. Let's call it, 55-45, 60-40. I think, the more you listen, the more Sark talks, I think he really, really is feeling optimistic about what he has with Baxter and Blue.
Mm, yeah, I like it. Yeah, that's it's going to be interesting to see how they and if and when they do go to that air raid type of, game or scenario, who's going to step up and be that guy. Because, replacing Xavier Worthy and arguably A.D. Mitchell, who played excellent last year as well, it's a tough job, man. So, lastly, I want to talk about the quarterbacks. We all know Quinn Ewers is the dude. He's the established starter. I'm not even going to mention Arch Manning because I don't care about Arch Manning because he's a backup quarterback. And if you're a Texas fan, sorry, but, just hope he doesn't transfer.
Yeah, we're going to have to talk about him here in a couple of minutes because one thing about Ewers is he has missed multiple games each of the last 2 years. So you need to have a backup that you can at least go out there and give you a chance.
Yeah, that's fair. And that's something I want to get your take on, Josh. I mean, you've covered guys going from Utah to the NFL. You've dove into the draft and all of that kind of stuff. So for me last year, Ewers was my Heisman guy before the season. Eric knows this. I've been super high on him from day one. I mean, since back in his Ohio State days, if you want to call him days up there, he was there for 5 minutes. But so if he stays healthy, I mean, I look at him as he's a top five pick next year. I mean, are you kind of in that same ballpark as I am? I mean, I'm super high on this guy. I don't know what you think about him.
I mean, I should preface this with I've been a basketball guy my whole life first, but either basketball or football, I have never pretended to be a scout or a personnel expert.
Sure.
I will say this. Okay. I watched from afar Quinn Ewers, of course. He was awesome in the Big 12 championship game, live, threw for 450. He was awesome. Played reasonably well, well enough against Washington in the Sugar Bowl. When I watch Quinn Ewers, I don't think he's an automatic, no doubt, 12-year starter in the NFL. I don't know. Is he a pro? Yes. Is he a long-term starter? I don't think so. I don't know. But I do think he's got the stuff to be a first-round draft pick. You start looking at the quarterback class this year. It was probably smart for a number of reasons that he didn't come out, one of which was the draft class this year is super-duper deep, so who knows how far he would have fallen. Eric, as you said, right, there's been some injury stuff, right? In 22, he hurt the left shoulder. In 23, he missed a couple of games with this shoulder. If you want to be a pro, right, you have to prove you're healthy. And, nobody's ever going to complain. Pro personnel guys are not going to complain if you're going back to school to get your number of games started into the 30s, okay? And that was a point that Sark made, I think, on National Signing Day. It's he only benefits if he comes back and stays healthy, proves he can stay healthy, and starts another – look, if they go to the CFP title game, you're starting potentially 16 games, and that means you've started 38 in your career. So, again, I don't know that he's a no-doubt NFL starter. I do think he's got the stuff. I think he's got the arm talent. I think he's got the moxie. All you hear about is how his leadership has improved over the course of time. Of course, that comes with maturation. He's really taking a deeper leadership role with some of the guys. The old guy's gone, right? Xavier Worthy, A.D. Mitchell was an older guy. Defensively, you had Devondre Sweat, who was a fifth-year guy. Byron Murphy was a three-year guy. So this is goes without saying, this is a gigantic year for Quinn Ewers, not only as a collegian, but to prove himself as a potential, Jason, as you said, maybe a top five, top 10 pick. Fascinating situation because, as we all know, Quinn Ewers going to the NFL or potentially winning a Heisman, winning a national title, these things are all preordained since he's in the sixth grade, right?
Yeah.
He was getting scholarship offers when he was 12 years old, goes away to Ohio State, comes back. He's the native son returning to the flagship program of the state. So there's just a lot on his shoulders, and it's going to be very, very interesting to see how he handles it, because how he handles all of this is going to really dictate how good Texas can be. And we think they're all going to be really, really good, I think, right?
Yeah, I mean, that seems to be the general consensus. So let's talk a little hypothetical since Eric did bring it up. So if he goes down, what do you think that does to Texas? I mean, how much faith do you have in Arch Manning? Because I'll put it out there that I have questions about, like, the level of competition he was playing against in high school, some other things that I've heard. If his, you know, you hear the common the sayings like, if his name wasn't Manning, he'd be a three-star, that kind of stuff. So what's your take on that? I know Sark said he was terrific in spring practice. So outside of that, I haven't heard anything.
So a couple of things. And again, I've seen like 30 minutes of practice. That's it.
Yeah.
The time that we saw him, now this was early in spring practice. Surely he's improved from practice one to practice 13, but early in spring practice, I didn't think he looked particularly sharp. He was underthrowing balls. He was sailing balls. He was leading guys over the middle on balls that would get these guys hospitalized, stuff like that. did not look particularly sharp. So there's that. Now, that was against air.
Yeah.
What does he really look like in live situations, in contact? Of course, he's not getting hit. He's a quarterback, but like with a pass rush in your face, with a hand in your face, with Alfred Collins bearing down. So you can listen to any of the recruiting guys and he's a five-star. That's all well and good. We don't know what Arch Manning is because what's his career been? He came in for a series against Texas Tech late last season, showed his legs a little bit, had a pre-snap penalty on the very first snap of his career, which I thought was a little ominous, but I digress. we just don't have like the book on Arch Manning to like decide what he is. Now, all this said, he's number two. If Quinn Ewers goes down, like he's number two because behind Arch Manning is a true freshman, Trey Owens. He's not going to be the number two. Arch Manning is the number two. And look, of course I am not rooting for an injury to Quinn Ewers, but yeah, of course it would be fascinating to see what Manning could do if he was put out there in non-garbage time. Now, I will say this. Steve Sarkisian has sort of indicated here a number of times that there's going to be a role for Arch Manning. I don't know what that is. Could it be on like short yardage stuff, right? You keep hearing he's a deceptively good athlete, can really tuck it and go with his legs. His high school numbers, confirm that. Jason, as you said, who knows, what the competition was. We'll see. But, it sounds like there might be some sort of role. And I saw you roll your eyes, and I agree with you. I don't know, man. It's going to be interesting because we just don't know what he is in any shape or form yet.
Yeah.
I hadn't heard that. So they're considering like an arch package.
Oh, I didn't say that. I didn't say that.
Well, that's what it kind of sounded like you're describing.
Okay.
Did I misunderstand?
I did not mean to indicate that. Sark has said that he can envision some role for Arch Manning.
Okay. So he left it probably intentionally vague.
Open-ended. Yeah. Is that an arch package? Do you put Manning in there on, third and two, second and one? I don't know, but it sounds like there will be some sort of role. Don't know.
So. Interesting. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe that's to hold the field goals. I don't know. You never know.
Yeah. Or is that just like a keep him happy?
Yeah.
So he sticks around, I wonder.
Well, I'm sure that's got to be a huge part of it because these kids, I mean, they got to tell them something or they'll just hit the portal.
Yeah, I mean, just in this day and age, I think that's a legit possibility at least.
Well, he's the presumed starter in 2025. Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody's arguing that. I mean,
no.
We assume that this is Quinn's last year and you are grooming Manning to be the guy in 2025. You know what the most fascinating thing of all of this is? You have, if you're Texas, you have the number one recruit in his respective class, Arch Manning, right? He was a five-star kid, number one overall recruit. Arch Manning will play or spend his first 2 years of college not even getting a legitimate chance to get on the field as the number one overall recruit in his class. I don't know that that's ever happened. 1 year, maybe. Okay, maybe a kid's not ready, red shirts, fine. 2 years in college and you're not even getting a chance to really get on the field, that's the most fascinating part to me. And part of me was a little surprised that you weren't going to maybe not open it up to a full-blown quarterback competition, but give Arch a bunch of one reps to see what he has. And that hasn't happened either this spring. So just fascinating that you have this kid, and you haven't given him a chance to really get on the field yet.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. I think a lot of us were surprised when he went to Texas because of the quarterback situation and how long he would potentially have to sit. I mean, I remember us talking about it 2 years ago. We're going, what the hell? He's going to be on the pine for 2 years. Thought he's supposed to be like number one. So I don't know.
Yeah, we figured unless yours came out and kind of set the world on fire a little bit that, you know, and left for this year's draft.
Well, that was part of the plan, I think. I think the whole thing with Arch was like, you know, you committed and like you're looking at the timeline. And I think even Quinn thought he was leaving after this year, but like cooler heads prevailed and he's coming back for another year. I don't think it was part of like the Manning family timeline to be sitting a second year because you thought Quinn was leaving, but obviously things changed.
Indeed. Yeah. So now that we've got all the offense and defense and stuff out of the way, let's run through the schedule real quick. We're not going to go week by week here, just highlight some of the stuff. So we're going to get a good look at what Texas is really made of in week two. It's Saturday, September 7th at Michigan on the road. So between that, and then you got kind of a few layups before it looks like what I would say the defining two games of their schedule, and that's Oklahoma at home and then Oklahoma at the Cotton Bowl, obviously, and then Georgia at home. So what's your take on the schedule? I mean, you mentioned it kind of sets up well. Any potential hiccups outside of those three that you could see? I mean, I think it sets up nice for them.
Yeah, no, I do think it sets up nice. Oklahoma, Georgia, obviously that's going to dictate, like, at least early in the season, you know, your college football playoff aspirations. Now, remember, no longer 14 playoffs, so you can absorb more than one loss and still make your way into a 12-team playoff. So, you know, if you take Oklahoma and Georgia off the board, you know, the two games that stick out to me are you have to go to Arkansas, which was a forever, like, blood rivalry forever in the Southwest Conference. That's being reignited now with Texas entering the SEC. And then in that vein, you have to finish at Texas A&M on Thanksgiving weekend, which was another,
speaking of blood rival.
Now, look, I'm a rivalry guy. I think rivalries are important for the fabric of college football, especially with all the craziness now with realignment. I got a little bit of Utah BYU. Again, I've been on the ground 10 weeks, and like Texas A&M is like a much different beast. And people are very, very excited.
That game's going to be wild as hell.
Oh, man.
Yeah, especially if Texas is really good and, you know, maybe needing that game to qualify for the SEC championship game, get into the playoff. That's going to be a war. I really can't wait for it.
Oh, man. Us either. Trust me. We've been like the second that. And those of you who don't know, some of you listeners, the only team in the SEC that voted against adding Texas and Oklahoma was Texas A&M because they hate each other and they don't want anything to do with them. And Texas A&M has little sister syndrome. So sorry for all you listeners that like A&M.
It might be that. It might also just kind of want to have the state to yourself and the SEC footprint, but
that's true. Yeah. I don't think the fans necessarily care about having the state to themselves with the SEC footprint. There's a lot of, well,
from the fan side. Yeah. I think there is a little brother aspect, but
but from the, you know, the executive, the board of regents standpoint. Yeah, sure. They've all got big oil money and that's all a big dick measuring contest down there. So that's all part of that. So now we're going to put you on the spot, and I know you've been on the ground 10 weeks, but give it to me. Do they get all the way back? Can they win the national title? Do they win the national title? Give it to me.
Yeah, I think they're capable. I think they have enough. They're not the best team in the SEC. I would say Georgia's the best team in the SEC. I think Texas is a clear number two. But look, if you can find your way, you can find your way into the 12-team playoff without going to the SEC title game. Like, that's the way this is set up. So, you know, sort of how like the NCAA tournament is like predicated upon like matchups. Like, if you catch a bad matchup, you're going home. I think this 12-team playoff might be a little bit like that. Like, if Texas can just find their way into the 12-team tournament, and if they can get a home game before it goes to the bowl games, they have enough, right? They have enough veteran leadership. They have enough guys who have played in big games. Steve Sarkisian is among the, you know, elite offensive play callers in the sport. I think he's in the, you know, approaching, you know, the top tier of college football coaches. I just, you look at the program, you look at the personnel, I think there's enough to win the national championship. I'm not going to say they will, but I think there's enough where you can be sitting here coming out of spring ball, believing that they can at least be in the mix to win the whole thing. I don't think that's unfair.
Absolutely. Yeah. I don't think anybody would disagree with that. At least anybody who's paying attention. So, you know, except maybe an Oklahoma or Texas A&M fan, but Eric, do you got anything for Josh before we let him go and plug his content and stuff like that?
No, I already asked my one bonus question, so I'm all set.
All right. So, Josh,
you can have a second one if you want.
I don't have one lined up.
Eric's he's a preparation guy. Oh, you got something off the cuff?
Now that you mentioned I could have an opportunity for a second one. How much longer do you think Whittingham coaches? I'm a huge fan of the guy, and I'm hoping that it's like another 10 years, but he's been there forever. I think this is going to be year 21 for him, if I'm not mistaken.
2021. I believe the current contract runs through 28. If he coaches through the end of the contract, he'll be 68, 69 years old. I don't think he coaches through the end of the contract. That's just a gut feeling. I mean, I thought he was going to retire after the 21 season, but stayed. He's a competitor, and he's got the fire, and he's healthy. Look, he's not a young guy anymore, but he's healthy,
right.
Still works out every day. He's got a barrel chest, for a 66-year-old guy. I don't think he coaches through the end of the contract. Talking to him, kind of on my way out the door, from Salt Lake City, I think he wants a crack at a 12-team playoff because I think, he believes that they left games on the table in the Rose Bowl against Ohio State, against Penn State. He thinks that they can compete on that level. So I think he is still coaching now because he wants a shot at the 12-team playoff. If they were to make a 12-team playoff this year, maybe perform well, maybe he says goodbye after this season. But to answer your question, I don't think he'll coach through 2028. And, he's that rare sort of college football coach these days where he's got all the job security in the world. They're never going to kick him out. And, not exactly like Nick Saban, but sort of in that ilk, he's going to retire when he decides to, retire. And, personally, they should probably build a statue of him outside Rice-Eccles Stadium. No, that's the, that's the type of impact he's had on that program and that community, quite frankly.
Well, yeah, that's awesome, man. Josh,
I can't think of a program offhand that would benefit more from the 12-team playoff than Utah. Because you look at the last couple of seasons, not this year, but like 21 and 22, right? They drop a game or two early. But when you get to nut cutting time at the end of the season, no one wants to play them.
Well, they're positioned really well coming into the new Big 12 with no Texas and Oklahoma there. I mean, they're probably going to be either one or two or, at worst, third in the odds to win the conference.
I'll be curious to see where they are in the Big 12 preseason poll.
Yeah.
They could win the Big 12. I don't know that I would vote them number one, but they certainly have enough, with Rising back and Brand Keithy back to at least contend for the Big 12. And again, you don't have to have one loss. You can absorb two losses and still get to a 12-team playoff. And, as you said, Jason, I think Utah is just really well positioned to at least get to the 12-team playoff.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, man, we very much appreciate you coming on and talking the Longhorns with us, and also a little bit of Utah, little leftovers from your previous job. So tell our listeners where they can go and find all of your Texas Longhorns football and basketball content.
Yeah, I appreciate that. My stuff is at LoneStarLive.com, or you can hit me on Twitter. My DMs are open, comments, concerns, questions, whatever, at Joshua_Newman.
All right, man. Well, Josh, thanks for coming on, man. We appreciate you. It's always a pleasure having you. And hopefully we'll maybe bring you on during the season, maybe before Texas A&M, and we can get, you can come on and make some nasty predictions. And then if they win, you can come back on and then spike in the offseason.
You can come back, yeah.
Yeah, back.
Appreciate you guys.
All right, Josh. Talk to you soon, buddy. Take care.
Thanks, Josh.
All right, man. Longhorns. Let's do it. I like it, man. Some of the stuff he's talking about on the defense with regard to replacing those guys in the defensive interior. I mean, my personal take, you prepped for defense. I did not, so I had to kind of listen and learn there. But I don't know. I would say wait and see. Because, I mean, they are going to face some tough offensive lines with, on their schedule. So
yeah, up front, I think they are going to, you know, there will be a bigger challenge in 24 playing in the SEC up front than there was in the Big 12. But, and I get that you can't just go replace Byron Murphy or Devondre Sweat. And you probably can't even, like, replace them in the aggregate, right, with, like, hey, these four guys that would rotate in. But the reality is, you know, it may not be as much of a strength, but they can be a little bit worse up front on defense before they're bad.
Yeah, because
they're starting from like a really good spot, right? You can come down a little bit before it's like a huge issue. You're like, oh, man, we're screwed. Will there be a drop off? Yeah, probably. Is it going to be something that just tubes their chances of making it to the playoff or competing for a national title? Not necessarily.
Yeah, I would tend to agree there. I mean, we gave Texas crap for years because their defense was so terrible. But
it was.
And then last year, I mean, I kind of had questions about it coming in. I was like, I think they're going to be pretty good. And then they showed up against Alabama and fucking dominated and just bullied them the whole game. And I was like, all right, so I guess they're pretty damn good on defense. You know, we'll see. So I don't know. I'm really interested to see what their first year in the SEC looks like. I think it is one of the more exciting storylines because it's not often you see, I mean, with all the realignment we've seen over the years, it's not often you see a team come into a new conference and just be prepped to play at the highest level within that conference. It's rare. So, All right. So I don't know what we're talking. Are we doing draft prep next week?
I think we're looking at Monday or Tuesday kind of a last look at, you know, specifically like, you know, what the structure of that episode looks like. We haven't decided yet or talked about too much, but next week is next Thursday is the first round of the NFL draft. And then, you know, obviously through the weekend, but next week we will be talking about draft stuff, whether it's, hey, I want my team to get this guy or here's who I'm higher on than, you know, I see on these mock drafts or.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Mock drafts are always fun, but I mean, we're both fans of NFL teams here. I mean, I'm a Ravens fan. You've been a Vikings fan your whole life. Mm-hmm. And so I think it'll be interesting for us to talk a little bit about those teams because the Ravens being on the back end of the first round, you know, not a whole lot to talk about there. They definitely need some offensive line, could maybe use some receiver help, but I think the Vikings have a very, very interesting situation, and we could spend
10 to 15 extremely interesting situation.
Yeah. I think we could spend 10 to 15 minutes easily talking about just the Vikings. So
They've done a good job, I think, of giving themselves all sorts of options.
I mean,
I know which one I think they'll take and I know which one I want them to take, but they don't have to do that. And they can still, you know, no matter how it shakes out, they can come away with really good players.
Well, don't worry. I kept the receipts. So if you come out next week and say that you want them to take JJ McCarthy, I'm gonna look up some old text messages of you talking about McCarthy, and I'll bring them out on the show. Don't worry.
You don't have to. You scroll through my Twitter feed. I particularly, I don't say late December, probably. I've slowly warmed up to him. I don't
kind of like you did to Harbaugh. Slowly warmed up to him.
This is slower. I guess the best way to say it, if you'd have told me in December, hey, you know, the Vikings are going to draft JJ McCarthy in April, I would have lost my shit. and then really kind of looking at it more, and we'll get into it next week. I wouldn't, you know, if they take him, fine, I guess. And I sort of moved on to like, my big hope is that they don't give up too much to trade up to get him. I'd be concerned, but
yeah,
they may not have better alternatives, I guess.
Well, yeah, you never know. I remember, I remember several years ago when the Chiefs traded up to get Mahomes and everybody was like, what the fuck? You know, this guy, like he's a Texas Tech Air Raid guy. And
nobody knows.
Yeah.
The Bills, I forget his name, but the Bills GM talked about this. It must have been like whatever their version of the winter meetings are that MLB has, but or they'll go out, I think, to like California or Hawaii or somewhere, the owners' meetings.
Yeah.
But the Bills GM was talking about it. He's like, well, you know, people gave us all sorts of grief about how much we gave up to trade up to draft Josh Allen. And it was like, well, if it works out, no one's going to care what you traded away to get him.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't work out, then I'm not going to be here for you to, you know, give, I'm not going to be the one here living through the pain of kind of rebounding from that. I'll be gone.
Right.
So, and similar sort of thing.
Yeah. And that's something else that I think we'll mention next week is there's been a lot of impactful trades in the NFL. And I think it's going to severely impact the draft. You know, guys like Stephon Diggs going to the Texans. What do the Texans do now? What do the Bills do? Because they've got like me and you to throw to out wide. Yeah. So should be
Allie playing the slot.
Yeah, there you go. And she missed today because she's still working, obviously, because she's a slave. So, slave to the recruiting. It's not fun. But, all right. So, we'll be back with you guys next week. You can follow us on the interwebs at South End Zone Pod. That's, you know, YouTube, Twitter, all that good kind of stuff. And we'll be back next week talking a little NFL draft and see what's going to be happening there. But until then, we will catch you guys later on.
Thank you very much. Have a great day.